We are back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. Medical error is the third leading cause of death in America. Miscommunication between medical practitioners themselves and between them and their patients can lead to life-changing outcomes for those patients and their families. One person who's working to change the prevalence of medical error is Dr. David Mayer. Mayer is a cardiac anesthesiologist by trade, and 2 decades ago he started questioning why his hospital's leadership wasn't tracking the failure and success rates of procedures or infection rates in his department. It was only when the Institute of Medicine first released a report on medical errors in 1999 that hospitals, including Mayer's own, began to take notice. Mayer has since co-founded the University of Illinois Institute for Patient Safety and is now the executive director of the MedStar Institute for Quality and Safety. His current efforts include implementing safety and communication programs for hospitals, and he joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski by phone to explain why it's taken so long to get here.
It's been very tough changing culture. We know that regardless of whether it's in healthcare or other organizations. And even though the Institute of Medicine report came out back 20 years ago, there's still many today that deny that the issues are as prevalent as they are. This is the third leading cause of death in the United States today, preventable medical harm. And yet it hasn't gotten the attention like cancer or heart disease or diabetes that many of us believe it deserves. The big issue that you touched on is so true. I remember being on a panel in Sydney, Australia one time, and I was so frustrated that I couldn't get my physicians to see the change that was needed. And it wasn't until pay for performance through CMS came out that all of a sudden doctors start going, whoa, we're not going to get paid if we don't get the antibiotic in before we make the incision in the operating room. We're not going to get paid if we're not stopping the antibiotic based on evidence-based guidelines. That people didn't, it was then that they started responding. And so I believe from day one, I said this when I was tired and jet-lagged, but I've stuck with it, that the way you change culture is to educate the young and regulate the old. When I said that, I got about 50% who applauded and 50% who hissed. But I really believe that's what it takes. Some of my generation who've been practicing for 25, 30 years and been very successful in the ways that we rewarded people for success are now struggling with having to go slower and pay attention to quality and safety versus volume of cases that they were doing or volume of people they were seeing from a billing standpoint. So I truly believe we need to educate the young, but we also need to really push more pay for performance issues that have been effective in driving change in the past.
Yeah, and at its heart, the medical system, it has a lot of factors involved. There's hospitals, healthcare technology companies, you have government agency policies, patient advocates, clinicians, everyone involved in these massive systems that some may see as too big to fix or fail. But at the bottom line, a lot of this is seen as for-profit healthcare systems. So I imagine that's also a key obstacle. You mentioned money and incentives was the way to get some change influenced. Healthcare is a constant debate in this country, but do you see the inherent problem of all of this being driven by profit?
It really is when it all comes down to it. And look, there's like in any business or industry, there's the saying, no money, no mission. But that said, we are not putting out a high-quality product. When you look at the number of preventable deaths and preventable harm events that occur every year. And I'll be the first to say healthcare is doing some amazing things. We are curing cancers. We are treating patients who are living longer with congestive heart failure. There's wonderful things going on in healthcare, but it hasn't come without a cost that is related to the structure and the process of how we administer that care. We have so many teams that now are involved in care, and yet we drop the ball so many times in communication between those teams that is essential to the patient's well-being and best outcome. And then on top of it, you've got so many different stakeholders, and this gets to why the movie, the documentary Bleed Out, is so important for everybody to see across this country. country and really across the world, is because with all these stakeholders in place, we don't learn from our mistakes because of lack of a transparency or fear of transparency. One of the biggest issues that not only do we have a medical harm crisis, but then when harm occurs, we follow the old 1960s and 70s models of what's called delay, deny, and defend. We don't want to admit we made a mistake because we're afraid of big-time lawsuits. We're afraid of litigation. We're afraid of bad PR. So what do? We lie about them. We deprive patients and families the answers to questions that they're yearning to want to know and understand about how their loved one, the care went in a direction nobody had anticipated. Sometimes that happens because we can't cure everybody. We can't try to heal everybody because healthcare is just so complicated. But there are times where the harm has been because our care broke down. And until we start sharing those messages, and until we are free from fear of litigation and other things that allow us to learn, or at least a litigation process that is redesigned so it favors the patient and family and learns from the mistakes, we're going to make the same mistakes over and over again. And this has been shown to happen for many, many years. So I think the Bleed Out film is so important because through transparency, we have shown through CANDR, the Communication and Optimal Resolution Program put out by the federal government, we have learned that through transparency and openness, we are able to learn, we are able to fix our processes and systems and make care safer. And then equally, if not more important, we're able to be open and honest with patients and families, share with them what happened, answer the questions. And many times we avoid long court battles and just lawyers sort of armoring up to win at any cost type mindsets. And that's why the movie Bleed Out is such an important movie, because it shows what happens when that approach is taken. And that approach is being taken all over the country today, many times.
Bleed Out's an example of, obviously, medical error gone wrong and a lack of transparency, accountability. Can you give us an example of a hospital doing the right thing following a medical error and how that event transpired versus the doom and gloom view that most hospitals anticipate?
Sure. There's a number of hospitals that have started this approach because they've learned through the research that was done by my hospital, University of Illinois, in 2012, plus other hospitals. And then it led to the CANDR, the Communication and Optimal Resolution Toolkit, that was put forth by CMS. That was designed by Dignity Health, Christiana Health, and my own MedStar Health. And we worked and piloted it, and now it's in the public domain. But we have shown that not only is open and honest communication after a preventable medical harm the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do, because we don't see the lengthy litigations. We don't see the drag outs that the boroughs were put through. And most importantly, these organizations are learning from it and improving their systems and seeing less preventable harm after the learning. There are about 300 hospitals that have started embracing the CANDR model and in our some stage of implementation into this program. The other thing I would encourage the viewers to do is just to go to YouTube and Google Jack Gentry, G-E-N-T-R-Y, and Vizient, V-I-Z-I-E-N-T, and you will see a great 5-minute video that talks about what happened to Jack and Teresa Gentry at MedStar Health and how they were treated after the preventable harm event that occurred that left Mr. Gentry in a wheelchair the rest of his life. How MedStar responded was completely different than the response that the boroughs got. And I think when people watch Bleed Out and then see how the Gentrys were treated, many of us will look and say, if it was me or my loved one, how would I want to be treated? And what's the right thing to do? So I think there are hospitals and health systems that are trying to improve this and make a difference, and they're seeing great results. Their serious safety event rates are going down, and they're providing safer, higher quality care by embracing candor.
There is the trouble overall of unifying a healthcare ecosystem when there's so many moving parts. You could have certain teams of a hospital doing really great work and in sync with each other. But when you bring up all of these other elements, what kind of challenges does that present?
Well, one of the biggest challenges, I think, is the existing medical liability system within this country. It was set up, and look, I'll be the first to say also that we have a medical liability crisis because we have medical liability. I just stated that we've got over now, the estimates are 250,000 patients dying every year from preventable medical harm. We need to fix that. And the way to fix that is to improve our processes and systems and how people are trained. On the backside of it, we need to improve our medical liability system so this doesn't become a feeding frenzy where patients and families become pawns in a game where the only winners are the health systems and the medical legal communities. And so the way that you start changing this culture is what's happening with organizations like Beta Health. They're a large medical malpractice group in California. They have seen the light, and they know the right thing to do, and they have started giving their hospitals who implement candor a 10% reduction in their medical liability costs each year because they know if they implement a candor-like approach, which they call Beta Heart, they will reduce the amount of bad events that happen to patients and families and thus ultimately make the care system better. So there's a great organization that now gives 10% discounts on medical liability. Copic in Denver and Nebraska is another medical liability company that is doing similar type approaches and embracing candor and training their hospitals and their hospital leaders and caregivers on how to use a candor approach because they believe in it. And so I think we're not at the tipping point, but we're seeing more and more hospitals and more liability carriers starting to embrace this model because, as I said, they see not only is it the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do.
Us as people, as patients, we all will need to go into the hospital at some point in our lives. It's just a fact. And we go in there blindly trusting the experts, right? But what can we as patients do when something happens to us, you know, if we're cognizant or if we have an advocate there with us to check that the medical facilities we get treated in are striving towards patient safety? You know, how do we best advocate for ourselves to make sure that we're getting the best care, but that in case something happens, we're prepared to see it through properly?
It's a great question. And I think more and more patients and family members are wanting that education. First, to your point, there are a number of websites out there and a number of public reporting portals like CMS, where you could go in and see outcomes for hospitals within your communities. How do they do in things like surgical site infections and other types of infections? How many complications have they had, like wrong-sided surgeries or leaving something behind in an abdomen after a surgery? Those could be checked out through Hospital Compare. Leapfrog is another group that gives hospitals grades based on a number of their quality and safety outcomes. Now, many of these portals are not perfect, and they try to use what's available, and sometimes the data is a couple years old, but at least it gives you a place to start to do a little bit of background education. And then you talked about having a patient advocate. I think it is so critical, and I do it with my family, is that if one of us is in a hospital or going through some sort of treatment plan, that a family member or a friend is there with you and is able to hear things that you might not hear, is able to check things that maybe you're preoccupied with thinking about how you're going to get 2 days off work or something. If you're in the hospital, having a family member always asking, okay, what medication are you giving my husband, my daughter, my grandfather? And it's 4 o'clock. Is that the time the medication is due to be given? What's the dose? And keeping a little record or diary of these things. I know it sounds funny and puts more sort of onus on the family to step up. And people would say, well, you know, why do hospitals need families to do this? It's hospitals and health systems are just very complicated, high-risk type areas, and it's been shown that patients do better when they've got an advocate there with them that's asking questions and confirming things with the nurse, the physician, for that patient.
Well, Dr. David Mayer, I want to thank you today for taking the time to talk about patient safety with us.
My pleasure, Audrey. It's always enjoyable. We're making a lot of great progress, but we still got a lot of work to do.
Dr. David Mayer is the CEO of the Global Patient Safety Movement Organization and the executive director of the MedStar Institute for Quality and Safety. Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski reached him by phone. There's more information about his work at wuwm.com.